And we're holding on Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of smicha that we've been learning on Korbanos, that we've been learning the last couple of Mishnahs, the Mishnah says, Chomer b'smicha m'mitnufa, there's a chumra in smicha on Korbanos, that there is over tnufa, the waving that we do by some Korbanos as well, that we do by some Korbanos, over tnufa m'smicha, and vice versa, there's a chumra in tnufa over smicha. The smicha, the chumra in tnufa is the chumra in smicha is she'echad meini for chol chaverim ve'en echad slema for chol chaverim. When it comes to tnufa, if there's a korban that needs tnufa, in particular one of them is the shlamim or the toda, which is the type of shlamim, you have to wave the chos of a shoik. In the case of the toda, you also wave it together with one of each of the types of bread. So when you have, suppose you have that a bunch of people together bring a shlomim or a toida, then one person will wave it on behalf of everybody else. But the einachad same for chaverim, but one person does not do it for all the other chaverim. We talked about yesterday, the straightforward understanding would be that each of them has to do smicha, although we talked about yesterday the possibility that maybe it means that on the contrary, that there's no smicha by a korban of shutvim at all. In any case, so that's the difference between them. On the other hand, chomer tnufa. On the other hand, there's a chumra when it comes to tnufa. Shat tnufa neheges the korbanos ha'yachol the korbanos ha'tzibur. That tnufa will apply both to individuals' korbanos and the tzibur's korbanos. We have a shlomim or a toda among an individual's korbanos. Also the eil nozir, which is also a type of shlomim. And then you also have the tzibur. You have and then an addition of a yochid mincha. Not a regular mincha now. A mincha sota is waved, and then a mincha. But among the korbanos tzibur, you have the shtei lechem together with the sheep that come with them as a shalmei tzibur, as we've learned about before. You also have the mincha sa'omer. So you have tnufa that applies to both types, v'chaim of a shchutin, and it can apply to living animals or to shechted animals. Namely, when it comes to the sheep that come with the shtei lechem, then you have we learned previously when we learned about the shtei lechem in the fifth parak of our Masechta that the sheep the shalmei tzibur are waved alive, and then afterwards, after you shecht them, you again wave the and you wave together with the shtei lechem, and then afterwards you wave the chos of a shoik shalahem after they're shechted. So tnufa applies whether the animal is alive or after it, and also after it's shechted, and it applies to korbanos that come from living animals, such as we're talking about the chos of a shoik or the shalmei tzibur, or medavash ein beruachayim. They also apply to things that were never alive in the first place, that come from Tzenech, the various menachos and the breads of the Torah, and the various menachos, all of them, but again, the minchas ha'omer for the tzibur, the minchas soita for yochid, the bread of the Torah that's waved together with the chos of a shoik, the bread of the nazir. So tnufa applies even to things that weren't from animals in the first place, mashenkin b'smicha, as opposed to smicha applies only to living animals. You only do it when the animal is alive. You don't do it after the animal is shechted, and you don't do it to non-living korbanos in the first place. Okay, so the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. We learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says that he should put his hands on korbanoi, on his korban, l'rabis kobale korban l'smicha. That comes to include that all the people who are involved in the korban, all the people who are joined together in the korban, that all of them do smicha. So now, as we said in the Mishnah, one person can't do it on behalf of all of them, which would mean that all of them have to do it. Now, why is that? Sheyochol v'alo dinhu. Now, you would have thought to say that maybe one person should be able to. You should be able to make a kal v'chomer. Which is you have an extra thing that it takes place by ones that are shechted, as we said in the Mishnah, that generally speaking, tnufa takes place after the animal is shechted. And yet there's a miyut on it, as we're going to go on to say, when it comes to when it comes to chovering, when it comes to chaverim, when you have people, a bunch of people pooling their money together to bring a korban, and there, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that only one person does the snufa on behalf of all of them together with the korban, so then you could argue smicha shom nisrabs of the shchutin. Well, then smicha, where you don't have a ribui by that, you only do smicha, as we said in the Mishnah, only on living animals, ain't a dinshut. It's not the chovering. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that there should be a miut on it that? There should be a mute when it comes to a bunch of people joined together, and one person should be able to do the smicha. And yet our Mishnah said that not. Why not? Tamabana korbanoi, the rabbis kobale korban l'smicha. So no, therefore, that is why. The pasuk tells us korbanoi to tell us that that every person who's having a kapara with this korban has to do smicha on it, and therefore that would mean, and so if you have a bunch of people together, then yes, all of them are going to have to do the smicha, and since, as we learned yesterday, smicha is something that you can't delegate to somebody else. You can't have a shliach or whatever, so therefore it means that each of them does in fact have to do it, himself. Okay. So the Gemara asked, well, the other way around, well, then maybe indeed we should have a ribui. Maybe we should say that we should use a kavachomer to say that tznufa should apply to a bunch of people together, that if a bunch of people together are bringing a korban that requires tznufa, maybe indeed all of them should have to wave it together, and we should have a kavachomer the other way around. Umas smicha shol nisrabs b'shvutin, madoch smicha, which there's no ribui of it. When it comes to shchutin, because again smicha takes place only when the animal is alive, nisrabs b'chovrin, and yet we said from the word korbanoi we have the ribui that it applies also to chovrin, also to people who are joining together to bring the korban. Tnufa shnisrabs b'shchutin. Well, then tnufa, which does take place also, and generally speaking, with ones that are shchutim, and then occasionally also with ones that are alive, namely we said with the shlamim of shavuos. So you could argue, ain't a dinch, and a srabs of a chovrin, how much more so it should be, there should be a ribui as far as a bunch of people, so all of them should have to do the tnufa. Tos was asked the other way around, maybe on the contrary, maybe we should also argue that we should say that maybe smicha should take place by shchutin as well. Use a similar kavachomer to say that it should apply to shchutim. Tosfos doesn't answer that. Balabatish, I guess we could say that the definition of smicha pretty much is that it involves a living animal. You put on it b'chol koicha, and as we talked about yesterday, the various symbolisms of it, that like you're transferring, you're giving the animal almost like an asinus koyach, you're making it like now it's your representative, and you're doing that on behalf of the tzibur, and you're putting in your own imagination into that which led you astray into the animal, and so on and so forth, all the various symbolisms. You could say maybe that those don't really apply after the animal is shechted. Anyway, the point is, though, at least we should have a kavachomer to say that when you have a bunch of people bringing a korban together, that in fact they should all have to do tznufa with it. So the answer is, you can't mishum b'lo efshir. It would be impossible. Because heichi levin, how would you do it? Lin fukulu bahadi hadadi, should all of them be doing the tznufa together? So you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are together doing a korban. So Reuven will put his hands, and then Shimon will put his hands under Reuven's, and Levi will put his hands under Shimon's, and so forth. Ka'av yachatzitza. Then that becomes a chatzitza, and you can't do that. Now Rashi Ksavyam points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta that in fact when you have a korban that requires tznufa, we said the kohen and the owner together do the tznufa. The owner puts his hands there and holds the korban, and the kohen puts his hands underneath the bialim's hands, and they do tznufa together. The answer is, Rashi says, it's basically the tznufa is mainly being done by the owner. The koyin is kind of helping them along with it, so the fact that there's a chatzitza between the koyin's hand and the korban is not a big deal. But here, if we're talking about that all of them need to do smicha, because all of them share equally in the korban, not smicha, tznufa, because all of them share equally in the korban, then there shouldn't be chatzitza between any one of them and any other one. Now, that's a point of Rashi. Tosfos refers over here to their explanation earlier in the Masechta on that subject, where Tosfos had learned differently, that when we said over there the Kohen places his hands under the owner, it doesn't mean that he places them under as in he's touching the hands of the owner, but rather that the owner holds the korban or the mincha or whatever it is exactly further up, and the Kohen holds it further down, closer to the bottom of the kevi. Nevertheless, though, in this case, when you have a bunch of partners together, there wouldn't really be room enough for them to all hold it without there being a chatzitza among some of the owners. Okay, Svasemes says in Tzorach Yun, so what if it's only one or two of them and there is room to do that? Maybe indeed we should do that. Tosfos had referred over there to something that comes up currently in Sota, which is being learned now during Sfira, where the Sota's mincha has to be offered, and again it has to be Yatzav Tznufa over there, and you have the same, and you have the question again: is it that when we say the Kohen places his hands under her hands, does it mean that she's holding the mincha and then the Kohen puts his hands directly underneath her? In which case you have a problem of Tznius, that his hands are touching hers. Or again, does it mean that she's touching it in one, that she's holding one part of it closer to the rim, and he's holding it closer down to the bottom, but still, you know, it might be that their hands brush against one another. Anyway, choices brings there from the Yerushalmi a couple of possibilities. Either they have an old Kohen do it, or it's so short that there's less of a problem with it. So over here, if you had a bunch of partners together that hold the carbon, it wouldn't work out. It wouldn't work out because there would be the matter of chatzitza. So practically speaking, that's not possible. Should we say leinif v'hod v'leinif? Should we say, okay, so Reuven will do the tznufa, then Shimon will do the tznufa, then so forth, and we'll do it that way? Also not. Tznufa amar achmana v'leit tznufos. The Torah tells us that the korban should be waved. Tznufa is in the singular, implying that there should be one waving, not a whole bunch. So therefore, there'd be no way, practically speaking, to have many different people do it, and therefore the din is that one person does tznufa on behalf of all of them, as opposed to with smicha. Tosfos Yomtov explains that tznufa is a noun. There has to be a tznufa, and it means specifically one, because otherwise it would be pluralized tznufas. But the samach, he says, is a verb, so it doesn't say how many smichas can be done. So if need be, each one of them will do the smicha individually, or all of them will do it together, or whatever. No problem with that. So they want to ask, there's smicha b'shchutin leka? You're telling me that you never had lesa? Are you telling me you never have a case where smicha is done on shechted parts of animals? V'hotznan, we learn in a Mishnah, bizman shekoyin gadol roitza lahakter, when the kohen gadol wants to burn the parts of the korbanos. Now normally, the kohen gadol is generally not required to do the avodah. He does the avodah on Yom Kippur. He doesn't generally have to do it during the year, but he has the right, even though you have the 24 Mishmaras of Kohenim, each one serving in the Bais Mikdash for a week, he has the right anytime he wants to preempt them and say that he wants to do the Avodah. So Mishnah in Masechta Tomid describes what happens if the Kohen Gadol decides one day that he wants to burn the parts of the Korban Tomid on the Mizbeach. Now normally what happens is, you have a bunch of kohenim that do the various avodas of the Tumid, the shechting it, the kabbalat adam, and so forth. Eventually, what they have is a bunch of kohenim who carry the parts of the korban to the mizbeach, together with also you have the various other things that go with it, the nesachim, as we talked about in this mesechta, and the chavitik kohen gadol, and so forth. If you look in Rashi Ksav Yad, you have various gusoys, you have various numbers that are given. Regular Rashi says that there were 12 Kohanim involved at the Tumid, and the Sun Kodshim changes that to 11. Meanwhile Rashi Ksav Yad says 13. And the Foshim point out that it's not really a contradiction. It depends how you look at it. Are we talking about just the ones who are carrying the pieces to the Mizbeach? Are we also counting the one who did the Shritta and the Kabbalah and so forth? And therefore you can get various favors. In any case, usually what would happen is that they shech the Tumid, they cut it up, they do all that, they bring the parts to the Kevesh, they salt them, and then they leave them there a little while they go do some davening and some other things, and then later on it's brought up to the top of the Mizbeach and they're thrown one by one into the fire. It's machlokas in Masechta Yoma whether the same Kohenim who brought them to the Kevesh are the same ones who throw them into the fire, or whether it's other ones, whether they make a different pious for it. Be that as it may, the point is, if the Kohen Gadol decides that he wants to burn the pieces on the Mizbeach, he would go up the ramp of the Mizbeach, the deputy Kohen Gadol would be at his right, because in general the deputy Kohen Gadol always walks to the right of the Kohen Gadol as literally his right hand man. he gave the mark to the kevesh. When the Kohen Gadol reached halfway up the kevesh, off a scan the amine, the hello, then the scan would hold on to the Kohen Gadol's right hand and help him to go up the rest of the way. Now, the first Kohen of the Kohen, now like this, he would have had the Kohenim, who usually would have been bringing up the pieces to the Mizbeach. Again, I mean, it can be the original Kohen who first brought that, those pieces to the Mizbeach, which is according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Or you have a different opinion in the Mishnah over there that they would make another lottery between the Kohenim and decide and find other and then pick other Kohenim who would do that. In any case, usually, for example, the first Kohen in the line would bring up the head and the front and would bring up the head. And one of the legs of the animal, and he would bring them up together and throw them into the fire one after the other. Here, the Kohen Gadol is doing it instead. So that first Kohen instead gives him those pieces as a Rosh Varegla, gives him the head and that leg, Soymech Aleihem, and the Kohen Gadol does smicha on those pieces, which is why we're asking. We see those are pieces of the Shechted Korban. Vizorkan, and then he throws them onto the fire. Hoshit Hashemi Lerishin, Shtei Yadayim. Then the second Kohen hands to the first Kohen the two front legs of the animal, and he gives them to the Kohen Gadol. So in other words, the idea is it's more of a covered for the Kohen Gadol. Rashi explains, instead of having that each Kohen will take his turn handing the pieces to the Kohen Gadol, instead we're going to have one Kohen who's going to hand them one by one to the Kohen Gadol. But each one is going to be handed to by the one who was originally going to be going to bring those pieces. So let's say, in other words, we have among the Kohenim, we have, for example, the original Gadol was made, the original Pius was made, and we're going to have, for example, Reuven was supposed to bring up the head and the right back leg, and Shimon was supposed to be bringing up the next pieces of the korban, the chest and the neck, whatever. The Mishnah gives their different opinions what the order was. In any case, the idea would be, in other words, in our case, Reuven hand and then Levi would be bringing the next pieces and so forth. In this case, when the Kohen Gadol is involved, Reuven gives his pieces to the Kohen Gadol and he does smicha on them and throw them in. Shimon gives the pieces that he would have brought up to Reuven, who gives them to the Kohen Gadol. Then Levi comes, brings the pieces that he was going to bring up, gives them to Reuven, and Reuven gives them to the Kohen Gadol, and so on and so forth. The same and the Kohen Gadol does smicha and then vizirkan, and he leaves. Mishnah Tasheni v'Holachloy. At that point, the second one, Shimon, leaves and he goes v'chachoy meshitim l'shav poleivarim. And so it is. Each of the other Kohenim in turn comes over, gives his pieces that he would have brought up to throw onto the fire of the mizbeach. He gives it to Reuven, the first Kohen, who in turn gives it to the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol v'chachoy meshitim l'shav poleivarim. And so they would continue giving him each of the pieces. Semechalein. And the Kohen of Zerkon and the Kohen Gadol would do smicha on them and throw them onto the fire, and so we see there is smicha with shchutim as well. And the Mishnah continues. There was Manshu who wrote, and if the Kohen Gadol prefers, who's saying the Fakhayim Zerkin, he can do smicha on the pieces, and other people can throw the Pashtus, the original Kohenim, would throw them into the fire. In any case, we see clearly that you have smicha on shechted parts of a korban. So what are you telling me that in our Mishnah and in the Gemara that smicha applies only to living korbanis? The answer is Amar Abaye, Hosim Mishum quoted a Kohen Gadol. The difference is that there's not really smicha when it comes to shechted korbanis. Here we're only doing that because of the covered of the Kohen Gadol. Quoted a Kohen Gadol, Rashi, regular Rashi instead has the Gyusa, regular Rashi and Rashi Ksavyad have the Gyusa Yukora the Kohen Gadol, which is the same thing. Yukora is the Aramaic word for covered. Anyway, the point is, you want it to make it seem, so regular Rashi explains it should be as if he brought all of them. So it's not that there really is a concept of smicha on korbanos min haTorah, but like this, it should be as if he actually offered all of them. Rashi Ksavyad says it differently this way, that his burning it, his throwing it into the fire and burning it should be different and made special compared to all the other Kohenim. So no other Kohen is going to do smicha on the parts, but he does. But that's just a special thing done for the honor of the Kohen Gadol, not that that's actually part of the halacha of the way it must be done. So we're still back to that smicha applies only to living karbonis, as we said in the Mishnah, unlike tnufa, which applies sometimes to living ones and sometimes to shechted ones. Okay. Hadron aloch sheminis. The next parak, first of all, now we're back to regular Rashi only for the rest of the Masechta. We just have regular Rashi, not Rashi and Rashi Ksavyad. So there's a note over here in the Gemara that from now on it is what's printed over here is in fact Pirush Rashi. the subject of our upcoming perek is going to be the shtei alechem and the lechem afanim, the details of how they're made and how they're the shtei alechem. We discussed about how they're offered earlier in the masechta. So here we're going to focus on how they're made, and then we're going to talk, and then mostly our parak is going to focus on the lechem afanim and the dinim of placing it on the placing it on the mizbeach. So let's give an overview. We know the Torah tells us there's a shulchan. And the shulchan, as we're going to see, as we go through the Gemara, you have the shulchan itself is a table, like the kind of tables that we're familiar with. Next to it on the sides, you have the pasuk describes that you have with it ksoisav and mnach yosav. And actually, Amchumish brings two different opinions. What are ksoisav and what are mnach yosav? One of them is frames that stood by the sides of the shulchan, which, as we'll learn in the Gemara, they helped hold up the lechem afanim. And then the other part you have is sovers. You have sticks. You have kanim, the Gemara calls them, that are made like half tubes, and they go between one lechem afanim and the next, as we'll see in the Gemara, so they don't weigh down each other too much and break. And this way, it also allows fresh air to circulate between them, so that they don't spoil. Even though there's a nest that the lechem afanim would stay on the shulchan an entire week and don't spoil, you still have to do within gerach hateva, and therefore you'd have that. So we'll see in the Gemara over the next couple of days, the exact layout of it. But then you have two stacks of lechem afanim, sits in each stack. They would put them on the shulchan. They'd put them on the shulchan on Shabbos together with two sneefles of levoina. They'd leave them there all week. Then the following Shabbos, they'd take them off, burn the levoina and the bezichin, and distribute the lechem afanim for eating among all the kohenim, and replace them with new lechem afanim. So our parak is going to focus mostly on the lechem afanim, how they were made, and the various dinim of putting them on the shulchan and taking them off and so forth. So the Mishnah says, shtei alechem niloshes achas achas. The shtei alechem were kneaded one at a time. So you take an isar and a flour for each one and knead them separately. Not that you should need two asurinim together and then divide it in half, as we will see in the Gemara eventually why that is. The nefes achas achas, and they have to also be baked individually. On the other hand, lechem aponim niloshes achas achas v'nefes shtayim shtayim. The lechem aponim are kneaded one at a time. One, either lechem aponim are twice as large. Each one is two asurinim. Each one was kneaded separately, but when they were baked, they could be baked two at a time. Some mafarshim say it could even be more than two at a time. The Minchas Chinuch says that it could even be baked more than two at a time. But they're kneaded separately. Now, as we're going to see in the Gemara, the lechem aponim had a very complicated shape. So how do they make it keep the shape? They would make them in a dfus, which is a form or a mold. The word dfus, or Tosfos points out another version of the word is dfus, with a test, means a form or a mold. Eventually, once printing was invented, then that became the standard word in Hebrew for a printing press, where of course you have a bunch of svarim or books that are made in the same mold and the same form. Tosfos points out that when we're saying that they would make them in a dfus, and we're going to see it means that they were baked using the dfus. Tosfos discusses, and various mafarshim after that also discuss, is it that the dough was placed inside the dfus and baked that way, or was it actually wrapped around the outside of the dfus? Gemara is going to mention, for example, the point that when it bakes, it enlarges in size a little bit. Even though now it's not chometz, you have to keep the matzah, but nevertheless, listen, you know, we see even matzahs are baked in a bakery. You also have that they're still a little bit thicker than the circles of dough that they were made from. Because even non-chometz bread puffs up a little bit in the baking. Tosfos points out, if they were put inside the tefus, that wouldn't be possible. That would seem to imply that they were on the outside of it. So different proportions talk about different possibilities. In any case, So they would make them using this force so that it would keep its shape, as we're going to see as we go through the Gemara. The Lachem HaPonim had a very complicated shape, so you need to have some way of making it keep that shape. So they would use this force for that. And then when they would take them out of the oven, no similar force, they would put them into another tefus, traditionally skalkalu, so they don't get wound, because again, they have a very complicated shape, and you don't want them to break. They're very fragile, so therefore they'll put them into another tefus, so that they'll maintain their shape. And in fact, Tosfos points out they would leave them in those. Those are what are called the pasuk when it mentions the shulchan. It mentions that the shulchan has kol roisav, which literally means it's bowls. So that means, in other words, that these bowl shaped forms that they would use for the lachem haponim. Tosfos discusses they certainly wouldn't put it on the shulchan inside the bowls. They have to be definitely on the first one has to be on the shulchan itself, and the other ones one on top of the other of it. But we mean that they would keep them in the form until it's time to put them on the shulchan. What the forms were made of? Rashi on the pasuk says the one that they baked it in was made out of iron, and all the other ones were made out of gold. The Rambam holds that all of them were made out of gold. We're going to learn in the Gemara. We're going to learn in Braisa that there was a third one as well, as we'll see in the Gemara. By the way, as a linguistic point, Tosfos points out, shtei halachem. The word shtei is feminine. The word lechem is one of those things that sometimes can take masculine verbs and adjectives and numbers and whatnot, and sometimes feminine. So therefore, here we have the expression shtei lechem, but you have other times when we find that lechem is referred to in the masculine form. So the Gemara says Menahani. Really, how do we know that the Shtei Lechem had to be kneaded and baked one at a time, and the Lachem HaPonim has to be kneaded one at a time? So the Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa when the Pesuk says about the Lachem HaPonim, Shnei Asronim Yia Chala Ha'Echas, the one Chala, each Chala should be two Asronim. What does it have to use the word Ha'Echad? Melamet Shem Loshes Achas Achas. That teaches us that each one is kneaded. That each one is kneaded separately. How do we know the same thing is true of the Shtei Alechem? Therefore, the pasuk says Yia. The word Yia means the same kind of thing is done for this. Has to be done in a different context as well, named the Shtei Alechem. Okay. How do we know that they have to be baked two at a time? Of the lechem upon him, that is. Tamalem of Samta Oisam. Therefore, the pasuk says that you should place that you should place them. So placing means placing them in this in or around this form that's going to be in the oven, that's going to be used to give them their shape, or to maintain their shape in the baking. Yochel Shtei Alechem Kein, you would think the same thing is true of the Shtei Alechem, you bake both of them together. Tamad Lama Oysam, therefore, note the pasuk says Oysam, which is a mute, which means only them, the Lachem Aponim, are done this way, but not the Shtei Alechem. One says, how can you do that? Hi, oysam, ha-pifte. You already used the word oysam to say that the shtela and that the lachem aponim are baked two at a time. How can you now also say that from that same word you have a mute to say that the lachem aponim is not, that the shtela is not? The answer is, in Cain, if the Torah only wanted to tell us that the lachem aponim can be baked two at a time, lema krov sam tom, then the Torah didn't have to say oysam, it could have said the sam tom, you should place them. And it would also mean two at a time. When it says the Samta Oysam, means you can learn both things. Number one, that they, which is the context of the pasuk, is talking about the lechem aponim, should be baked two at a time. And number two, because it says Oysam rather than just the Samtam, it means that it's also a miyuk, that the Shtei Lechem is not so, and therefore they have to be baked individually. So the Gemara says Tonan Abanam, we learn in a Braisa. The Samta Oysam, when the Torah says you should place them, the word the Samtam suggests specifically placing it in a tefus. Tosfos points out if it just meant to say to put them on the shulchan, then it would use the word Vinasata. The Samtam suggests of placing them inside a form. Or okay, Tosfos has said maybe it's not inside, maybe it's wrapped around it, but whatever. The point is that the word the Samtam refers to using a form for the purpose. So that means the tfus, that means you place them in a tfus. Ushloisha tfus in hain, and the Braisa points out there were actually three such forms. Now the Mishnah only mentioned two. But it's not the Mishnah only mentions the ones that are used after it has its shape. The Mishnah, when it says would be referring to one that they used when they first needed it, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara. And then you would have another, and then the other one the Mishnah is mentioning is the one that's placed to afterwards. So the Braisa is mentioning all three, but the Mishnah would only be mentioning the two main ones. That's how Mizrahi on the Pasuk explains it. That's only the ones after it has its shape. And then the Gur Arya on the Pasuk explains that we're listing only the ones that were the clay shards we're going to have, as we're going to learn tomorrow, Bas Hashem, and we're going to learn over the next couple of days. The question was the oven itself, a clay shards, where did the lacham upon him, got the Dushas and Guf, when they're baked in the oven. So therefore, if we say that not, then the tefus, the one that was used in the oven, is not a clay shards either, and therefore the Mishnah would be referring only to the ones that are a clay shards and not the one that was in the oven. In that case, but really there were three. Number one, you put it into a form, still in the form of dough. So in other words, you put the dough inside a mold and give it and knead it and then make it shape. Then there was another form inside the oven. They would preheat it with the oven. They would, Rashi points out, they would preheat it with the oven so that the heat of it will also help. They didn't want to use that same one. They didn't want to preheat it and then use it for kneading the dough, because then it's more likely to make the dough become chametz. So instead, you have when you heat up the oven, then this form is inside the oven as well, and it would get heated up along with it, and it would also help too, and the heat of it would help bake the bread. So that was the second one. Some of the Foshim learned that it was actually permanently installed in the oven, so it wasn't even something that you could conceivably take out and use for the kneading. Number three, Hoshur Roida, Noisim at first, then he takes the bread out of the oven, he puts it into another form, Kadesh let the scalkel, so as we said in the Mishnah, so it doesn't break, because at this point it has a very complicated shape, and it's very fragile. One point is, if we say the one it was baked in is attached to the oven, then of course they couldn't take it out for this purpose, but if you say it wasn't attached, then another point would be it got blackened from the heat of the oven, and therefore you don't want to keep the lacham upon him in it from then until you put it on the shulchan, so therefore you had a different one. According to Rashi, the one that was, anyway, they were made out of different materials. According to Rashi, on Chumash, the one that was used for baking, it was made out of iron, so because gold would get ruined in the oven, and then the one that was placed in afterwards would be made out of gold. According to the Rambam, it doesn't matter, all of them were made out of gold. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Lahadra with the first kama, why don't we put it back into the original form that we used for shaping it when it was dough? And the answer is can't. Kiven de ofi lo nofa. Once you bake it, it swells up a little bit, so it wouldn't fit in the original mold, and therefore you need a new mold for the purpose, which is slightly larger. So again, you have Tosfos' discussion about the one that it was the one that it was baked in, and maybe the one that was shaped in, was it in fact inside that, or was it the other way around? Was the form placed inside the dough and the dough wrapped around it and got its shape out of it? So the Gemara says Itmar. Now we have a discussion about the actual shape of the lacham upon him. So, lacham upon him kates and oisin oisin, how was the lacham upon him shaped? Rav Chanina omar kamin teva prutza. Rav Chanina says it was made like an open box. So, this is the familiar form. You have the first diagram in Rashi over here. This is the familiar form that we all learn as kids, that it was shaped like a box with two of its sides folded up and the other two sides missing, and a flat bottom. Rashi on the Pasuk explains, we're going to have later on in the Gemara, it's called Lacham Aponim, Shehayu Leponim Harbe. It had many different faces, many different sides, which is why it couldn't just be a flat loaf, or it couldn't just be a flat loaf of bread. But Rav Chanina says it was shaped like that. It was kind of flat bottom, the ends were folded up, and it was like a squared off U shape. Rav Yochanan Omer Kimin Sfina Rekedes. Rav Yochanan says it was like a dancing ship, a dancing boat. So Rashi describes a boat, like you think of like a canoe or something like that, a canoe or a kayak or a boat like that. It comes to a point near the bottom, and then it's wider, and then it's wider at the top. And it's really kedesh. It's called dancing because like it goes very fast. According to Rav Yochanan, that was the shape of it. It was pointy at the bottom, and then it widened as it went further up. Tosfos has a long discussion about it, and in particular, Tosfos points out, it seems from the way Rashi is explained. Now Rashi gives a diagram over here that it's only a V, but Tosfos points out that V, according to Rashi, seems to be only the bottom of it, and then afterwards it would have vertical walls going up from there. But Tosfos points out it doesn't really work out based on what we're going to learn later in the parak about the total height of the stack, given that we're going to learn later on the sides of the lachem aponim went up 2 tefachim or 2.5 tefachim according to different opinions, and so the 6 of them together made up a total of 12 or 15 tefachim according to different opinions that we're going to see later on in the parak for Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. But if you also have, on top of that, you also have the, according to this opinion, you also have where it widens from that point on the bottom until those vertical walls, then you would end up with more, then you would end up with more than 2 or 2.5 tefachim each, and more than 12 or 15 tefachim total. And Tosfos says that doesn't really seem to fit with the continuation of the Gemara. So Tosfos themselves explain that if we're going to, that according to this opinion, Sinner de Kedith, we're going to say, rather what we're going to say is, it was, right. Now according to Rashi, it comes out that basically it came almost to a point on the bottom. So, and then in every direction it sloped up from there until the walls. Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos learns that it was a V in cross section in one, from one side. If you look at it from one side, it'll look like a rectangle. If you look at it from the other side, it'll look like a V. So in other words, it would look like as if like you took a sheet of paper and folded it in half. That would be the shape of it. So that would be a way of doing it. Now, I understand according to the opinion that it was like an open box. So, Chanina, Heiner to have a Yasvi Bazichin. That explains where they could put the Bazichin. Now, we're going to learn later on in the parak that the two Bazichin that are placed on the Shulchan, it was Machloikas, Tanoim, where it was placed. Was each Bazich placed on top of the respective stack of Lacham upon him? Or is it placed next to it? If we say it was placed on top of it, so if we say that the bottom of each lachem aponim was flat, so fine. Then the top loaf has a flat bottom. You can put the bozach over there and it'll stay there all week. But El Amanda Omer means sinner de kevis, or pointer of Yechanan, that was like a pointy bottomed boat. Heichi Avu Yasu and the Pashtus, and the top of it also, the inside of it wasn't flat either. So Heichi Avu Yasu Bazichin, where would you put the Bazichin? Where would you have a flat space to put the Bazichin? And the Gemara says, "Fuck them up with the who? You would make them a space when you make the shape of the lachem upon him. There would be some place inside it. There would be an area where they would add extra dough. Where they would add a piece of extra dough there." So that would form a flat surface for the Bazich, and then when they bake it, it would maintain that shape. Okay. The Gemara says, "Bishlemin l'man de'omer k'min teva prutza." It's good according to the opinion of Rav Chanina that it was made like an open box. Heiner to have a yasi bazichin. Heiner to have a yasi kanin. Then we understand that's how the kanin could be used. We said before that you have the two frames that stand by the side of the shulchan, which the Gemara calls sniffin. Then you have the half tubes that went between one lachem aponim and the next, as we'll see, as we're going to see in detail later on in the parak. Those are called kanim in the pasuk. They're called ksavus and menachias. We're going to see later on in the parak with machlokas which one is which. Are the menachias the frames and the ksavus are the sticks, or is it the other way around? Rashi mentions both opinions in the chumash. Anyway, we're going to say later on in the Mishnah that you had the bottom lachem aponim was placed directly on the shulchan. Then above it you would have three of these sticks. Then you would place the second lachem aponim on that, and then so forth, and you'd alternate to lachem aponim sticks until you get to the top one. And again, the purpose of it is, first of all, that the full weight of each challah is not resting on the bottom one, which then the bottom ones would end up breaking from the combined weight, but also because this way air can circulate between them and they can stay fresh. So if you say the lachem aponim had a flat bottom, then it's easy to understand how you could put the kanin and how they would do the job of holding up each lachem. It would be like a wire rack kind of, and you put the lachem aponim on that and it would stand. But if you say like Rabbi Yochanan, that it was like a pointy bottom vote, whether you understand, as Tosfos understands Rashi, that it means that it basically came to a point on bottom, or whether you understand like Tosfos themselves, that it means that it had, that it had a bottom like that of a kayak or something. It's pointy along the length, not just in one spot, but still, either way, how do the do their job of holding up the lechem? You'd have in the middle over there, where you have that pointy, then you'd be able to have one corner over there, but where would the other two go? The answer is you'd make something sticking out. You take another piece of dough and put it in the place where the kanim are supposed to go, so that now the kanim have what to sit on. And what to hold up the bread from underneath. And then you keep on doing it that way. Okay. We want to ask another question. According to the Panina, who says that they were made like open boxes, kind of the samfil is sniffing the lechem, then we understand how the sniffing, the side frames are able to hold up the bread. Because each bread, each loaf has vertical sides that touch the sniffing. And therefore the sniff on that side, the frame on that side keeps the bread from falling over or breaking. But if we say like a Mirkanon, that it was like a dancing ship, then how would the sniffing hold up the bread? You're going to have a sniff on each side, but the bread is rounded as it goes down from there, and therefore you don't have much of a point of contact between each bread and the sniff that it should prevent it from breaking. Here's also where Tosfos points out that. That maybe even a coin to Rashi, you would have to say that he means only that the bottom of it was pointy, but then afterwards it would reach the full width of how much each lachem aponim is supposed to be. Each lachem aponim, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, was 5 tefachim wide, and then, or what was it going to be? Well, we're going to have different opinions, 5 or 6 tefachim wide, and then after that, it would go vertical from there. But still, the sniffing wouldn't really hold it up. The sniffing wouldn't really hold it up very well, or at least not fully. The pointy part or the diagonal part would still be able to break and fall. And the answer is the ogalahumiago. The answer is that they would round the corresponding sniffing would have a rounded part on the bottom, so that it would hold up the lachem aponim over there. Again, depending on how you understand sinere kedis, whether you understand it rounded on all sides like Rashi, or whether you understand it as rounded only and pointy only in one dimension according to Tosfos, then you're going to have the sniffin would be shaped appropriately for that. In that case, it might even mean, as Mephoshim asks, so what about then? Would that help? That would help for the bottom lachem aponim. What about the ones on top of them? So in fact it had to be like that for each place of the lachem aponim. There was a rounded protrusion over there to hold up the lachem aponim at that level, or maybe indeed there was only one on the bottom, and then the question would be how the other ones are supported. Okay. The Gemara says, here's another one on the other way around. Now, it's easier to understand the following detail if you say you have diagrams over here in Rashi to illustrate what we're doing over here with these frames. The top diagram here, further down in Rashi, shows you have the sniffing standing on the sides, and they're standing on the floor. The tabletop is a few tefachim off the floor over there, and then above it you have one lechem upon him and the other, and the sides of them, the vertical sides of them, are each touching the sniffim, and therefore the sniffim hold them up and prevent them from falling over. If you say spinner de kedis, then we're saying that the sniffim would not be perfectly straight, they would be rounded. You have another diagram in Rashi over here that basically it seems that Rashi understands that indeed each one would have a protrusion so that the shape of the lachem aponim, the rounded shape, would precisely fit on it, and therefore it would help hold it up. OK.
Okay.
Now the Gemara says the other way around. B'shleinu l'manam l'kvin sfinu rekedes. It's easier to understand according to the opinion that were made like a sfinu rekedes. So the Meirchana, I need to be in and sniff him. That explains why we needed to sniff him in the first place. Because the bread is made in this rounded shape, and therefore, and pointy on the bottom, pointy or sharp edged on the bottom, and therefore you need to sniff him to help hold it up. Elamanda Oman, Kimintava Prutza. But if you say that Shalachim Afanim was shaped like an open box, sniff and lovely. Why do you need to sniff him in the first place? It has a wide bottom. It'll be stable. So it can just stay like that. And the answer is fine. But even so, agav yukra de lechem. But because of the weight of the bread, each bread we're saying is made from two asroinim, and he's starting as a shiur challah, which is somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds, depending on the different poskim. Each bread of the lechem achonim was made of two asroinim, which means it's double that, somewhere between 6 and 10 pounds. When you have a weight of a stack of 6 lechem achonim like that, one on top of the other, tolach, it's going to break. Tosfos points out the word tolach comes from a word that means to break into pieces. They break into pieces because the bottom one in part would have so much weight on top of it. So therefore, you need to sniff him to help hold them up and keep that from happening. So the Gemara says, fine. B'shleinu l'mandam l'kum in sfinu rekedes. Here's another question. According to the Rabbi Yochanan, who says they were like sfinu rekedes, pointy or sharp edged on the bottom, sniffing agav shulchan menachim, then we understand that the sniffing, the side posts, were actually sitting on top of the shulchan. So you would have, there's nothing, so now you have, in other words, you have the legs of the shulchan, you have the top of the shulchan itself, at the from the floor until the top of the shulchan, there's nothing other than the surface of the shulchan, there's nothing other than the legs. We're going to talk about later on. There was the misgeres, there was a frame that surrounded the shulchan. We're going to talk about later on whether that was above the shulchan or below it. But anyway, then you would have, that was built into the shulchan. Then you would have these sniffim on the sides of the shulchan, on the top and on the top. Of the shulchan, you would have the sniffim sitting over there on the sides of the shulchan, and then they put the lechem aponim between them. And then again, as we said, you'd have the sniffim were made in such a way that the shape of them would conform to the shape of the lechem aponim of sfinu rekedes, and therefore they'd hold them all. Evel mandorma can teva krutza, but if you say that the lechem aponim was shaped like open boxes, sniffim hecha mana for who, then where would you put the sniffim? In other words, the question is like this. If you say the lechem aponim was like sfinu rekedes, then you have room on the shulchan. The width of each stack, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, was either 5 or 6 tefachim, depending on different opinions. The shulchan itself is also 5 or 6 tefachim wide, depending on those different opinions. But if you say it's sfinu rekedes, only at the top of each bread do you have the full width of 5 or 6 tefachim. Therefore, you have room to put sniffing on the top of the table, and you'll have curvatures made built into them to hold up the lechem aponim, and they'll be only at, so those sniffing will be wider when it comes to each row of lechem aponim. You'll have the sniffing together with those rounded pieces will be wider on the bottom, and then they'll narrow further up, and then you'll have the next one will be wider and narrow further up, and so forth, as you have the last diagram in Rashi. But if you say they're kmintava prutza, like Rav Chanina, then where is there room for the sniffim at all? The full width of each lachan upon him is 5 or 6 tefachim. The full width of the shulchan is also 5 or 6 tefachim. Where exactly are these sniffim going? So sniffim, hecha manachuhu, where exactly would you place these sniffim? A'ara manachuhu, would you put them on the ground, and they're sticking up next to the shulchan? And the Gemara answer is, yes, that is exactly what Rav Chanina would say, which is the third diagram in Rashi. The Amun of Abba Bar Memel, the Dibro Emekim in Sfinu Rekedes. Yes, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, that the lechem aponim was like Sfinu Rekedes. Sniffin, I got a shulchan menachem, and the side frames would be placed on top of the shulchan, and they would, and then they'd go from there. The Dibro Emekim in Tevet Tutsa, according to the opinion of Rav Chanina, that they were like an open box. Sniffin, I got a karpum menachem, then the sniffin actually stand on the ground, and they extend up above the height, above the top of the shulchan, to the height of the stack of lechem aponim. The Gemara says, "Kiman ozva hada amar." Now, which of these opinions, according to which of these opinions, is what it says in a brisa that Rabbi Yehuda, the hada amar Rabbi Yehuda, this Rabbi Yehuda says, Halachem ma'amidus ha-sniffin, va-sniffin ma'amidus ha-lachem. The bread, the lachem aponim itself, helps keep the sniffin in place. And the sniffin helps keep the lachem aponim in place. In other words, like the he was saying, in other words, that the it's so the Gemara says, commander, omak, can sfinir rekedis, that can only be according to the opinion of sfinir rekedis. Because, in other words, then what you have is, you have each, again, each sniff has this piece that's sticking out from it, that goes under the curvature or under the angle of the lachem aponim and helps hold it in place. And then those in turn, since they're sitting on top of the shofar, what keeps the sniffin themselves from falling over is because the lachem aponim helps hold it together. So the whole thing stays together that way. But if you say it was kamintei v'kruta, if you say like rapanina, that was like an open box, and you don't have that because then the sniffim are just touching the lachem aponim at the sides. First of all, then you don't need the sniffim to be held up by anything. They're standing on the ground, as we just said. But second of all, also, they're not, there's nothing of them that goes between one lachem aponim and the next that would stay in place, that would cause it to stay in place by virtue of the lachem aponim. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion necessarily would have to follow, would have to be, work only with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that they would make kamintei. Spinner and cabbage. Okay. The Gemara says Mesli, and I have a contradiction now on Rabbi Yehoshua. A brisa says, "Kamin kavera soil of a tanner." They made for the lachem aponim in the oven something like a kaveras. Kaveras literally a beehive. Sometimes in the Gemara, more generally means a type of basket that has holes in it. So they made something like that. Well, as we learned in the Mishnah, it was made out of metal, but it was in the oven. During the Kamin Tavla Merubas, it was shaped like a square piece of wood. And then they would bake the lachem aponim in or round that. Usually a kaveras is round, but Tosis points out here we have to say that just means it's compared to a kaveras only in the sense of having lots of holes in it, because you want the bread to be able to bake evenly, so you need holes for the heat to be able to get into it. But the actual shape of it, as we're saying over here, was square. Now, according to Rav Chanina, that works, because the lachem aponim is basically square shaped. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that it was oval shaped, and it was shaped like a boat. Then why are we saying that it was square? And the answer is MOPIA DEMICAM IN TAVA MURBAS. We mean that only the opening of it was square, so we can get the lachem aponim in and out of it more easily. If we had it exactly conformed to the shape of the lachem aponim, then it would be hard to get it in and out. But the bottom of it, but further down, it would have this rounded or pointy shape that Rabbi Yochanan is describing. The Gemara points out, Tanya, Commander Amar Kamin Sfinir Rekedis. We do have a Braisa. Now, before we had a Braisa, that's a point that Rabbi Yehuda is clearly agreeing with Rabbi Yochanan. But now we have a Stam Braisa that also agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that it was like Sfinir Rekedis. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, our boss Sniffin Shalzah of Hayushan. There were four side frames made out of gold. They had notches. They were mufitzolin. They were notched. Merashehen at their tops. So there's a few different opinions of what that means. Tosfos points out that one meaning of mufitzolin. So Rashi understands mufitzolin merashehen means that we don't have in front of us in Rashi over here something that actually says, but Rashi does. He explains that what it is that the tannin would fit into the Rashi explains the word mufitzolim means like branching. So it means, in other words, that you would have that the side frames were shaped like branches, and they would go up, and they would go, well, you know, let's learn the braisa first, and then we'll talk about the meaning of it. Abosnif and Shalzal Harisham, Mufutsolin Merashehen, they were branched or notched at the top. Kamin Dukronin Hoyu, they were like Dukronin, they were like pointy thorns, or like pointy bushes. They would hold up the bread with it, and the bread was shaped like Sfinir Rekedis. So this price clearly says it was Sfinir Rekedis. So Rashi explains, in other words, that the word mufutsalin means branch. So Rashi explains, in other words, it means that the sniffin themselves had different branches in it that went to different levels. And then, in other words, the idea would be that each place where it branches out would be a place that would be like a sort of a notch there between one branch and the next, and the edge and the tips of the kanim would go there. So that's how it is. Tosfos explains that rather it could mean that it can mean that no, what it means that it means that the sniffim had notches in them in different places, and the kanim would go into those. Tosfos discusses that also mufutsalin merashehin may mean basically that the kanim themselves were sort of forked at the end so that they would so they would stay up there. Tosfos in fact brings from a different braisa to Sefta that says that there were four sniffing that would hold up the bread, and that would only work, the Tosfos points out, that would only work according to the opinion that it was kumin teva frutza. But the Gemara has brought over here a braisa to support Rabbi Yochanan. On the face of it, that should mean the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. However, the Rambam paskins like the opinion it was teva frutza. So no sekelim on the Rambam discuss why that is. The Kesef Mishnah says because Reb Chanina is a greater Talmud Chacham than Rabbi Yochanan. Reb Chanina was the head of the yeshiva after Rebbe. He's senior to Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore the halacha should be like him. Now, the Lachem Mishnah says a different point in all the questions and answers the Gemara has brought over here when we said, where are the bazichin going to go? And we said they have to add an extra piece of dough to hold it up. And where are the kanim going to go? And they have to add extra pieces of dough to add up. So the Rambam considers those are doichet. Those are a very difficult way of explaining it. It seems much more straightforward to understand that they were flat and therefore the bazichin would fit nicely and therefore the canon would fit nicely and therefore the Rambam paskins like that. Another Meforish on Rambam, the Hara Maria, says maybe not. Maybe the Rambam was only mentioning that it was Tim, that the Rambam was only mentioning the square shape. Maybe that means that before they baked it, it had that square shape. Maybe when we're talking in the Gemara the whole time, Teva Prutza, Spinner de Kedis, maybe we're talking about that afterwards, the dough was pliable enough to be able to be shaped into one of these shapes when it was being placed on the shulchan, and the Rambam is not addressing that point. He's just addressing the shape in which it was made and baked in the first place. Some place that once came across, they have coinage from the Hashmonaim. There's one of the later Hashmonaim whose coinage seems to depict the shulchan with a little of the lachem aponim on it, and it does in fact depict them more U-shaped, which would seem to fit better with Rabbi Yochanan's opinion over here of them being more pointy on bottom rather than squared off like Rabbi Chanina says. But the Rambam again, according to the straightforward understanding, paskins like Rabbi Chanina that they were kumin teva prutza, and that's how we usually learn it in cheder, that they were flat on the bottom and then had vertical sides.